My guest is British writer Julian Barnes. 2 years ago, he captured American readers with the publication of his novel Flaubert's Parrot. Critics praised Barnes for his imaginative blending of fiction and biography. Barnes was working as a TV critic in England when Flaubert's Parrot was published here. His two previous novels, Metroland and Before She Met, are now available in this country. But fans will have to wait for his crime stories, written under the pen name Dan Kavanaugh, to appear in American bookstores. Barnes' new book is called Staring at the Sun. The novel follows the life of a young woman, beginning in 1921 and ending 100 years later.
This excerpt comes from the early part of the book, where the heroine, Jean Sargent, is a naive young woman about to get married. And one of the wiser women of the village has given her a book on sexology to break the news to her gently. The first night, she leafed through the book carelessly, skipping whole chapters called Sleep, Children, Society, and Appendix. If she did this, it didn't really count as reading. Even so, phrases dropped from the page and stuck like burrs to her flannelette nightdress. Some of them made her laugh. Some of them made her apprehensive. The word turgid kept appearing, and so did crisis. She didn't like the sound of those two. Enlarged and stiffened, she read. Lubricated by mucus, turgid again, soft, small and drooping, ugh, maladjustment of the relative shapes and positions of the organs. The clitoris corresponds morphologically to the man's penis. What could that mean?
In your novels, you seem to really take great joy both in wonderful writing and in very funny or very inspired flourishes, but also you seem to really get a kick out of bad writing. I mean, you quote...
Other people's bad writing.
Other people's bad writing.
Let's get this straight.
No, yeah. That's right. If it was your own bad writing, it would be a little enjoyment to be had. No, but in Flaubert's Parrot and in your new book, Staring at the Sun, there are several passages where you're quoting somebody else's bad writing, and it's really very funny, and I know that as the writer, you're really enjoying it yourself.
Yes, that's true. I mean... I was very attracted actually by this bad writing in this book of sexology, because I mean there's a lot of bad writing which doesn't really mislead or misleads about unimportant things or low levels of experience, but there's something that seems to me not just funny but deeply poignant about the idea of someone not knowing anything about sex and trying to learn it from books which use words like, you know, lubricated by mucus, you know, that sounds like something pretty nasty.
I have a feeling you have a real love-hate relationship with words.
Oh, I don't know where you get the idea of the hate part of it. I mean, I have a love relationship with words. One of my earliest jobs was as a lexicographer on the Oxford English Dictionary.
Really?
Yes, I worked there for 3 years. So I suppose I'm particularly skilled in words beginning with letters A to G, which came into our language between 1880 and 1975, but I don't think it shows in my prose.
Well, I'll tell you why I thought you might hate language as
yes.
well as love it.
Yes.
First of all, your main character at one point talks, I forget exactly what the quote is, but she says sometimes she gets fed up with words.
Yes.
And one of your great literary idols, I don't know if that's too strong a word, is Flaubert, who was obsessed with words and with le mot juste, with the right word, and I think that could be
that's
torture
true.
As well as
yes, I
fulfilling.
See what you mean. I mean, if you're obsessed with using words as precisely and perfectly as you can, then at some point you're bound to sort of butt up against the sort of the extremities of the use of words. You know that at some point words don't cover the whole of experience.
You are known now as one of the great literary talents of our time. You actually wrote a couple of mysteries under a pseudonym. When was that?
Oh, that was contemporaneous with starting to write under my own name.
Why didn't you use your name for the mysteries?
Well, I'll tell you what I said to myself at the time. I wrote a book under my own name, and then I wrote a mystery, and then I wrote another mystery, and then I wrote another book under my own name. And I thought that it was a sort of courtesy, you know, to the reader who picks up one sort of book and then picks up another and finds it's completely different, that it would be a good idea to separate the identities.
to a lot of people, being literary means that you read books, but you don't read mysteries and you don't watch TV. That's pop. That's something separate from literature. Do you have any problem with combining the two? And do you think any of your, you know, readers would think less of you if they thought of you as a television critic and mystery writer, as well as a, you know, a great novelist?
I think some might. No, I don't feel that I'm sort of slumming or anything by writing or reading mysteries or watching television. I mean, it's the idea of sort of high art being sort of exclusive seems to me very arid, and that you end up very soon in a cul-de-sac where there are beautifully written books which don't relate to life at all and are read as escapism by moneyed people. I'm not interested in that sort of writing at all.
You seem to be interested in riddles and hypotheses and unanswerable questions. There's a lot of those in your new book.
In the new book there is, and indeed it was originally called Question and Answer. One diligent critic in England counted up the number of question marks there were in the book, and I think he came to 500 or 600, but I haven't done the count myself.
It's an interesting form of literary criticism.
That's right. Yes, I think he probably just tried it for about 20 pages, and then he multiplied by 10 or something like that. But it makes a fair point.
You devote more than a couple of pages to answers to the question, "Is there a God?"
Yes, that's right. Towards the end of the book, the son of the questioning Gene Sargent gets obsessed by. We've now moved forward to the next century, and he gets obsessed by the question of whether God exists or not, and so he sets out a sort of series of hypotheses.
Would you read a few?
Yes, sure. We start with the two obvious ones. One, that God exists. Two, that God does not exist. Three, that God used to exist, but doesn't anymore. Four, that God does exist, but that he's abandoned us. A, because we've been a severe disappointment to him, or B, because he gets bored easily. Five, that God did exist, doesn't exist at the moment, but will exist again in the future. He's merely taking a divine sabbatical at the moment. This will explain a lot. Six, that God hasn't existed so far at all, but will exist in the future. He will arrive at some point to clear away our garbage, trim the grass in the public parks, and gentrify the neighbourhood. God is an overworked maintenance man in a stained boiler suit, with far too many planets to look after. We should consider paying more and having a regular maintenance contract, instead of calling him out on an emergency basis, as we do now. And one more, if we've got time for it. That there are several gods. This might explain a lot. A, they might always be quarrelling, and so no one is minding the shop. B, they might be paralysed by an excess of democracy, like the United Nations. Each god has a veto, and so nothing gets past the Security Council. Small wonder that our planet is derelict. C, this subdivision of responsibility has weakened their strength and weakened their concentration. They might be able to see what is going wrong and yet do nothing about it. Perhaps the gods are benign but powerless. Perhaps they can merely look on like eunuchs in a harem.
How did you come up with those answers to the question, does God exist?
Well, I just sat down and thought of them, actually. I certainly didn't go reading through religious philosophy and so on to find examples. I think I got one of them from a pamphlet on heresy or something like that I did look up. I ran them through a friend of mine who's a philosopher to see if he could come up with any more possibilities, but he couldn't add any to them. It's a game, but it's a serious game when you do something like that. And it's the sort of bursts of writing that I like doing very much.
Okay. Julian Barnes, thank you very much.
A pleasure.
Julian Barnes' new novel is titled Staring at the Sun.